Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In 1983, a club unlike any other opened in New York. Area, on Hudson Street in Tribeca, was a fusion of performance art and nightlife that reinvented itself with a new theme every 6 weeks. Less than 4 years later, it was gone, but in its brief heyday, it was the place to be. Not just for downtown artists and club kids, but for celebrities as varied as Andy Warhol, Madonna, Norman Mailer, Rick James, and even that noted lounge lizard, Ed Koch. For our occasional series we call Vanished Venues, we're looking back at Area 30 years later. And I'm joined by the club's co-founder, Eric Good, who's with me here in the Soundcheck studio, along with his sister Jennifer. He has put together a new book of photographs and mementos from those heady days. The book is called Area, 1983 to 87. Welcome to the Soundcheck.
Thank you.
So the book is big and heavy and has a pill in the cover, which is a reference to what?
Many people think it's a reference to drugs, but it was the very first invitation to Area, which came in a black velvet jewel box. And when you opened it, there was a pill where the ring would be, and you would drop the pill into water, and it would dissolve, and a cellophane piece of plastic would float to the top, and that would be the image and the information for the invitation.
That would be the actual invite.
That would be the item.
If I were to drop this blue thing into a glass of water, would anything happen?
No, it's a placebo. This is not a working invitation.
So I would just be wrecking the cover of my book. How did you decide who these invitations went to?
You know, that's a good question. We were part of a sort of, I guess, a downtown tribe, so to speak, in New York. And we kind of knew many people from previous clubs, and we all sort of traveled together in a circuit, Club 57, mm-hmm. the Mud Club, et cetera. What we didn't know was people above 23rd Street or 34th Street. And so we had to do something pretty dramatic to try to get people's attention.
Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of clubs in those days. You've mentioned some of them already. But Area was really quite, I mean, from day one, it was meant to be something different. What was it meant to be?
Well, you know, I had become sort of a club or social anthropologist, so to speak, at that point in my life. I mean, all I did was go to clubs, and I went from Hurrahs to Studio 54 to the Mud Club to After Hours clubs, gay clubs, the Flamingo, all different kinds of clubs at that time. And basically what I figured out early on was that there were either rock venues like mm-hmm. CBGB's or Max's Kansas City, so to speak, which really didn't have DJs. They were venues for bands, or there were discos. Mm-hmm. And so we sort of figured out, or, you know, there were the Mud Club at that point, which was sort of a punk venue, sort of a hybrid, which had bands and DJs. And we saw an opening to do something that was highly visual and dealing with all of the senses. So sound, tactile, visual. And so we wanted to expand on what wasn't there, basically. Mm-hmm. So I answered the question.
Well, so at what point did you hit upon the idea of let's do a theme and let's do it for a certain restricted length of time and then let's gut the club and do another theme and reopen?
I mean, that was early on. We realized that that was what we were interested in. And that started even in high school. We used to do sort of these thematic events where we would spend months and months building something. And its origins probably started with knowing about happenings in the 60s and the work mm-hmm. of people like Klaus Oldenburg and Jim Dine. And that evolution occurred very early on.
So what was the schedule? How long would you keep, a given theme, whether it was cars or sex or red, you know, or any of these? How long would that be installed in the club before you would take it down?
Well, there were sort of two layers of themes. There was, I mean, of course, in the beginning, we wanted to be even more ambitious and change them every, 3 weeks. But it ultimately became 6 weeks were the larger themes. And then we would do these sort of one-night obsession nights, which would be sex or body oddities or religion. And so we had two sort of layers of themes that we would play with.
So we're speaking with Eric Good, who is, along with his sister Jennifer Good, one of the authors of this new book that looks back at the club area in its years of operation, 1983 to 87. Listeners, we are looking at Area as part of our occasional series, Vanished Venues. Did you ever go to Area? Do you remember going to Area? Share your story with us at 866-939-1612 or post a comment at soundcheck.org. Again, that number, 866-939-1612. The book shows us what Area looked like and what the crowd of people who would gather there each night looked like. But we also want to remember what it sounded like. And so we're joined by Johnny Dinell, who was a frequent DJ at Area. This is, as Johnny says, one of the songs that you might have heard if you were lucky enough to get into Area between 1983 and 87.
Black stations, white stations, break down the doors.
And the Muffins, Black Stations, White Stations. It might be 1984, might have been the last time I heard that song before today. That's one of the tunes that Johnny Dinell was spinning back at the club Area. Johnny, were you, how soon after the club opened were you there?
Well, I think I was there pretty much from the beginning. Justin Strauss and I were pretty much the DJs. I worked Wednesday and Friday. Justin worked Thursday and Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
But I was lucky enough. I did the theme changeovers. I did the opening nights of the themes on Wednesdays, which was really, really fun.
So what would that do to your job as DJ? I mean, what would that do to your playlist that there was a new theme that was happening every 6 weeks?
It really, really pushed you to come up with the crazy ideas. I mean, I would find out what the theme was going to be, and it would be something like red. Mm-hmm. And what do you play for red? Because what I would try and do is, for the first hour or two, I would really play music that just concentrated on the theme. Like, then eventually it would turn into dance music.
Eric, how hard was it to get into the club?
Oh, gosh. I suppose it was hard for some people. Like I said, there was kind of a tribal, group that went to Area and didn't have any problem getting in. But the criteria back then was completely different. The landscape of nightlife is so different today than it was then. And so why someone got in that to Area versus what someone would go to today would be completely different. It wasn't based on money. It wasn't based on anything that had to do with economic strata. It was based primarily on, did you contribute, or did you dress up for the theme, or did you have flair and add something to the stage, in a sense. So it was almost like the actors coming in to perform.
Hmm. So who showed up? Aside from the celebrities I mentioned, your Andy Warhols, Madonna lived up the street, was there a lot. I mean, who was the rank and file Area club goer?
Well, there was probably a core base that were literally there every week.
Mm-hmm.
There was a group from Patrick McMullen to Michael Musto to Keith Haring was there constantly. Jean-Michel was there.
Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Right. I mean, there was a core sort of downtown group of people that were all sort of in the same age bracket, all trying to kind of make their mark.
Mm-hmm.
Artists, musicians.
And I guess some themes would draw some people and not others. The first theme was night, right? And there's a story of you attempting to get bats for Aria for that night.
We were exhausted just finishing the club, and so night seemed like an easy theme. And we always loved, or I always loved, the natural, the Bronx Zoo and the Nocturnal House. And we loved this idea of this dark nocturnal house, effectively, mm-hmm. and the bats flying around. And so, yeah, we went and placed ads for bats and went up to various people's attics and homes and around Central Park and tried to find bats as bat removers, sort of like Ghostbusters, actually. Very unsuccessful.
So you would actually pose as, like, pest control people and look for bats?
In some form. I forget exactly the language, but I do remember going with nets trying to capture bats in some old woman's attic in Central Park West.
All right. And you ended up getting what? Freeze-dried bats from somebody.
Yeah. And we did get a live horned owl, great horned owl. I think I would not do that today. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it was behind glass and it was insulated, and we did the best we could to give it a decent life for that period of time. But we went to remarkable lengths to find what we needed. Mm.
And Johnny, you would have gone to remarkable lengths to find music to fit some of these
right.
themes. There was a Madame Butterfly party,
right,
which gave you the chance to work in a fairly well-known song from Malcolm McLaren, right?
Right.
I'm a bounder. I married a Yankee girl. But I went back to visit old Japan, where there she was, Cho-Cho San.
Gotta have something to believe in. My white hungry, I do miss him. Someday soon he'll come around, just to stop my nervous breakdown. Call me fool, call me stupid. Then my arrow killed this Cuban. Say it with me.
I have faith in this luxury.
Butterfly from Malcolm McLaren, the man behind the Sex Pistols, who became a frequent guest.
Well, Malcolm was doing a whole opera sort of album, you know, the Fans album, and I actually worked on that album with him, and I believe it was the opening or the record release party, and we came up with the Butterfly Ball. So mm-hmm. I got a chance to play opera, and I would mix opera over a lot of the dance songs and stuff. And
very much along the lines of what Malcolm McLaren
what he was
doing.
Right.
This is one of our occasional series we call Vanished Venues on Soundcheck, and we're looking back at the Club Aria, which opened 30 years ago in 1983 and closed in 1987. Eric Good is one of the founders of Aria. He's here with me. Johnny Dinell was one of the two DJs at Aria. Now, Eric, Aria has been recently recreated just for a night. What was that like?
Oh, God. It was somewhat of a deja vu, actually. It was pretty crazy and pretty much like Aria, actually, because we had a very limited amount of time to do it. And it was a lot of people throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what would stick. And there were, in the end, naked people running around and glass doors looking into the floor with bondage and art from all the different people, cast characters we mentioned, from mm-hmm. Basquiat to Julian Schnabel to... anyways, it was a mashup of sort of what Aria could be like in one or two days.
And where was it?
It was at the Hole Gallery on the Bowery.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are some improbable moments that you can sort of relive in the book, Aria 1983 to 87. And the one that strikes me as perhaps the most improbable is this lovely letter from Archbishop O'Connor of the, you know, Catholic Diocese of New York City, regretting that he was unable to attend the opening of one of the themes of Aria. I assume it was Faith, was it?
Mm.
So Archbishop O'Connor, Ed Koch does show up at Aria. I mean, did you reach out to these people?
You know, I think Area, largely for people like Ed Koch, was a curiosity. I mean, we did have some of those characters. They weren't there all the time. But I think it was, we had no boundaries in terms of what we would try to, you know, get to make a theme real or make it complete. And so, like the bats, you know, trying to get someone from the Catholic Church just made it more real. And I think that one of the things we learned early on was to get the real thing is always better than trying to copy something. So we would get real bikers or real sex acts that people, the people that really did have, you know, a dungeon and did this as their livelihood.
So would the Archbishop have known that he was being invited so that he could be part of the verisimilitude of the project?
Who knows? I don't know. I mean, I love the fact that it was a letter. I mean, that's the other thing. When you think back 30 years, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have you know, social media. And so everything, you know, we had to go to a payphone. All these kinds of things, you know, again, made the landscape so different.
Johnny, let's hear some more music that that folks might have heard when they were partying at Area. Gwen Guthrie's Padlock. Now, again, was this a regular part of your rotation?
Yeah, the Gwen Guthrie Padlock album was very big at Area. There was a whole Paradise Garage connection between Area and the Garage.
Paradise Garage being another venue.
Right. A lot of the staff and a lot of the Area regulars would go to the Garage after Area.
What time did Area close?
We could never get people to come to Area really before midnight. Yeah. So it closed about, you know, I guess at that, in those days you could close, well, 4 o'clock it would close.
Mm-hmm. In theory.
Yeah, we would go to like maybe 5 or something, I think, right?
So when you say people would go to the Paradise Garage afterwards, it was basically as the sun's coming up.
Right, exactly.
Okay. All right.
And a lot of the Garage people would come, started coming to Area, and there became this kind of connection between the Garage and Area.
Uh-huh.
This song was produced by Larry Levan, who is the DJ at the Paradise Garage.
I think
Larry was kind of influenced a lot by Area. Uh-huh. I think it inspired him.
I'm locked up.
Guthrie with Padlock, another of the songs you might have heard, Partying the Night Away at the Club Area, a vanished venue that cut a wide swath through the downtown scene between 1983 and 1987. It strikes me, Eric, that some of the things you're talking about, trying to get bats, successfully getting an owl, you know, other live animals, live sex acts, closing after 4 or 5... There was a certain looseness in terms of like city ordinances and restrictions and things. Could you have done a club like Area today?
Well, it would be very hard in New York City for exactly the reasons you just state. I mean, it was really the wild, wild west. We had no community boards in that part of Manhattan at the time. And the drinking age was 18 when we opened. Smoking, of course, was ubiquitous. You know, there was no, you know, city task force forces that we have today. It would be very difficult because of all the restrictions. And I don't say that in a good or bad way, but it was clearly, when I think of young kids coming to New York today and trying to do what we did, I can't imagine, for all the different reasons, it would be very hard.
Well, Area was very much of its time and of its place. That place was on Hudson in Tribeca. And listeners, if you were there, share your story with us. You can call us at 866-939-1612 or post your comment online at soundcheck.org. That number again is 866-939-1612. And if you need to jog your memory, there are some photos of the club area that you can see on our website, soundcheck.org. Many, many more photos and other mementos of good times and just plain weird times are in the book called Area 1983 to 1987. Eric Good, Johnny Dinell, thank you guys for this little stroll down memory lane.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, no, thank you.
This is Soundcheck. Wrapping up with a little bit of music from an occasional denizen of Area, namely Madonna. Listeners, do you have an idea for a vanished venue, a musical hotspot that's no longer with us? Let us know what you think we should be looking at. You can leave us a comment on our website, soundcheck.org, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612.